بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. رسالة الصلوات بليز. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. Tonight inshallah we're gonna, on this final night, I want to address a topic of in very high, in my opinion, importance, something that is affecting us today. It's very relevant to us today. As you might have seen, the title for tonight is When Hadiths Are Used for Fitna. We are living in a world that is full of speed. Everything is happening speedily nowadays. Everything. Speeds are up there. It's not like back in the day where you had dial-up networking, none of that stuff anymore. You say something on this side of the world, all the way on the other side of the world, people know about it in the matter of maybe minutes, maybe even seconds sometimes. Sometimes you're the one who sends a picture out, and before you know it, that same picture comes back to you through other groups. And you're like, hey, I'm the one who sent that out. And others are getting credit for it. That's how fast things are moving nowadays. And since everything is governed by speed today, people are in a rush for everything. So for example, you will have someone who wants to go get a formal education in Islam and Islamic studies. They're in a rush to finish quickly. I want to speak sooner. I want to share the knowledge. I want to gain thawab, inshallah, if that's the intention. Sooner. And at the same time, because everything is happening so fast nowadays and people don't have time anymore, whatever a person says, others won't have time to go check up on what was said. So everything is taken as true, or lots of times things are taken as true. This is the world we're living in, a world of speed and a world of communication. Nowadays, it doesn't matter if there's 10 people sitting, 20 people sitting, for example, in a lecture, in a program, doesn't matter. I've seen pictures of some individuals who speak in their Husayniya, for example, there's no one sitting, but there's four top-notch, state-of-the-art cameras in front of them filming. Because this is going to go out. Nowadays, it's not about audiences physically necessarily. It's about how many views you get. So a person will have three people sitting in a majlis, for example, but they record that majlis so nicely and put it out. Tens of thousands of views in the Arab world, for example, in the Arabic-speaking world. So this is very good. This is a blessing. And our ulama have said to make sure to try to capitalize on this. And it's not just a lecturer who's supposed to capitalize. All of us can be a media for getting the message out to the people. The message of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. But at the same time, as much as these times are a blessing, they can also be very dangerous. And those who will have an agenda, those who will have problems, those who want to harm us and the message of Islam, for them also it's much easier to harm the message of Islam. Now, we live in a time where statements are being made. People are speaking on behalf of religion. Alhamdulillah, at least religion has become something that people are more interested in. They want to learn about. That's very good. But at the same time, once people want to speak about religion, what do they go to? They will go to Quran and they will go to Ahadith. In a world where people, others don't have time, audiences don't have time to check the veracity of things and claims, the Quran and Ahadith are being referred to. That's also great. Alhamdulillah, at least people know that this is important, that we have to go to Ahadith and Quran. But since people are in a rush, since people aren't willing to become learned enough sometimes, and since some might even have agendas, what we see is that randomly people will be picking up Hadith books and indiscriminately reading these Ahadith and explaining these Ahadith. Okay. Now, is this a problem or not? There is no problem with Ahadith. Of course not. We have to understand something though. Sometimes I am reading a hadith that has to do with akhlaq. For example, it says, be good to your parents, for example. No ramifications, no negative implications, nothing to that hadith, for example. Something very basic. If I read a hadith to you or someone reads a hadith to me about how we have to be good to our parents, will anyone say, oh, I have to first check the chain of narrators of this hadith, for example, before, you know, I believe it. It's saying be good to your parents. That falls in line with The message of the Quran, the spirit of the Quran, nothing problematic there, nothing controversial there. No one is basing religion on this necessarily, this hadith. It's something, it's an akhlaqi point, whatever. Sometimes though, we want to extract religion. We want to write the book of religion based on Quranic verses or a hadith. And it's going to be something that we're going to be giving statements on and opinions on that are going to be, that will be followed with grave circumstances, grave implications. Sometimes the worst of ramifications will be followed. We'll follow that statement that I make. Now, once again, Islam is not to be sugarcoated. Sometimes something is Islamic. Some people might have a problem with it, but since we are 100% sure that it's Islamic, we'll say it. Or we won't say it, but we'll believe in it at least. Sometimes I'm not sure if this is the case or not. Or I'm going to say something that goes against the mainstream. I better have good proof for it. I better have evidence for it. Recite salawat. For example, it has to do with furu'ud-deen. For example, I want to speak about khums, for example. Right, this is something that I can't base it on just any hadith. Just pick up a random hadith book and be like, all right, people, this is how we do khums. You got to have a research done because this has to do with the money of the people. One. Another example, sometimes it has to do with the aqa'id of the people, the beliefs. For example, raj'ah. Raj'ah meaning after Imam Sahib al-Zaman returns, how there will be some imams who will also return after him. We have this concept in the Shia school of thought. I want to talk about this. I'll just pick up any book and I'll just talk about it and I'll just draw conclusions. This is a major thing to believe in. If we're going to believe in it, I better believe in it properly. So I better be careful. I better be a researcher. I better have certain qualifications. It's not just a normal akhlaqi hadith that I can pick up any book and as long as it reads with Quran, I'm good. No. For example, it has something to do with the contemporary world we live in today. For example, unity and disunity that we'll talk about, inshallah, tonight. I am going to prove to everybody that we are to not have unity with anyone except Shia Ithna Ashari. A 12er Shia. That's all we can have unity. And as a matter of fact, the Prophet says, you're not allowed to have unity with anyone other than that. Or the Imams have taught us that. Sometimes I'm going to come to this conclusion using what? Using two or three hadiths. So sometimes I want to make some big statements based on a hadith. Sometimes no, the statements I make, they're not too big, they're not too controversial, they're not too problematic. And even if I was to be wrong, it's not going to cause any problems in the Muslim ummah, let alone even maybe lead to bloodshed. So tonight we want to look at this. How are hadith sometimes used for fitna? Now, either deliberately, voluntarily, or involuntarily, whatever the reason is, what can go wrong when I'm using hadiths or someone is using hadiths? Now, my disclaimer here, before I begin, is that we are going to be talking about this in general. I'm going to use an example to illustrate what can go wrong when we use a hadith, when someone uses a hadith, what can possibly go wrong. But that concept that we're going to be talking about is just an example. And that is the example of unity. The example of unity will be used, some ahadith that we have, that some individuals out there have used to disprove, dismiss the whole concept and notion of unity in the Muslim ummah. We're going to use those, inshallah, to understand that, wow, this is how things can go wrong. Whether it's about unity, whether about anything else that has to do with Islam that is important. So number one, what we have to do is, we have to see, list about five or six things that can go wrong with a hadith and dealing with a hadith one. After we go through those, number two, I'm going to have the example of unity and the hadith some have used against it. See what can go wrong, how these ahadith that might seem to prove their point, as a matter of fact, have nothing to do with the point they're making too. And finally, number three, is this a problem that we're dealing with today in the Muslim world? And the Shia world, that we will have a hadith that we have to deal with and we have problems with because they're taken out of context? Or no, is this a problem that we had during the Imam's times as well? One or two examples, if time permits, I want to share with us, with all of you, to show that no, this is a problem that existed even during the time of the Imams. And finally, number four, how all of this will be relevant to us today and what we have to be careful about. And does all of what we say have, does it all mean and translate to the fact that, okay, that's it, we will not go to any lecture anymore, or we will not go into any hadith books anymore? Is that what is meant or not? What is the solution? Sallu ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. What can go wrong with a hadith? What can go wrong? How can hadith be used for fitna? How dare you even say fitna and hadith in the same line, in the same sentence? How dare anyone say that? Well, the Quran lets us know very clearly that fitna, misguidance, conceiving people, deceiving people, deceiving and deception can be used in the same sentence with Allah's name, let alone hadith. What does the Quran say? The Quran says, وَلَا يَغُرَّنَّكُمْ بِاللَّهِ الْغَرُورِ. Don't be fooled through shaitan, or by shaitan, through what? Through Allah even. Sometimes Allah can be used by shaitan to fool people. Oh, I'll be good when I grow up. I'll do whatever I want for 30 years. After that, I'll do tawbah. Shaitan tells us, this is okay. Don't worry about it. Allah's mercy encompasses everything. Don't worry. Allah says, be careful. Don't let me and my name even be used to fool you, O mankind. لَا يَغُرَّنَّكُمْ بِاللَّهِ الْغَرُورِ. The gharur, the one who fools, the one who deceives, which is shaitan. Don't let him fool you, billah, through Allah. So if that's the case, no one should get all offended. Oh, how dare you say hadith and fitna in the same sentence? No, hadith is not a problem. The people are the problem. The people are the problem sometimes. Either they're doing it on purpose or accidentally. But we have to be clear about this. What can go wrong with a hadith? What can go wrong? Number one, sometimes hadiths, straight up, they're fabricated. As was done by the Umayyads. All right, that's one. We don't want to talk about that. We've talked about that before a lot. Number two, what else can go wrong with a hadith? How do some people deal with a hadith which is problematic and does not match the methodology of the greats throughout history of Islam and of the Shia school of thought? What do? Sometimes, no, the hadith is not fabricated, but the hadith is weak. The hadith is weak. These things we know. I'm going to go through these very quickly. Sometimes the hadith is weak, but it's in such and such book. So what if it's in such and such book? We have to be careful not to fall in the same trap that other schools of thought have fallen in. That you say, for example, brother, sister, Hadith al-Ghadir, the story of Ghadir Khum, can be found in 20 books of Ahl al-Sunnah, but since it's not in Bukhari. No. Vice versa. Since Bukhari said it, but no other hadith book says it, it must have happened. Are we going to be like that too or not? Is every hadith in every book considered, in any book considered strong, even if it's in the number one book of Usul al-Kafi? No, the Shia school says, I am going to look with scrutiny at every Sahaba separately, the same way I will look at every hadith separately. Yes, if it's in a certain book, that helps to me accepting it easier, but it doesn't matter. No one is off the hook. No one, and no hadith is off the hook that easily. Sometimes weak hadiths are relied on. If it's an akhlaqi hadith, fine, no problem. But if it's something that you're going to base some of the most sensitive issues on, you better have more proof than just that. And this is something we learn from the great hadith scholars of 1,000 years ago, 800 years ago. We learn it from them. Ahmad bin Muhammad bin Isa al-Ash'ari al-Qummi. He's the great, let's call him marja of his time then, back then, in the 4th century maybe. He is in Qum. He kicks out other muhaddithin of the Shia school. You're not allowed in Qum anymore. Why? You rely on weak hadith. How dare you narrate weak hadiths? Ahmad bin Muhammad Khalid al-Barqi. Please leave Qum. You're not welcome here anymore. I'm Shia, Ithna Ashari. I'm a muhaddith. I relate hadiths. Doesn't matter. You're doing weak hadiths. This is not the place for weak hadith. The people of back then, the ulama back then, they knew how things make their way into our hadith corpus. So they made sure to not allow that stuff in. Sahl bin Ziyad al-Adami, you're not welcome here anymore. Why? Because you rely on weak hadiths. This is something that is not made up today, brothers and sisters. This has been handed down generation after generation by the imams, that this is how you deal with a hadith. So this is something that can sometimes go wrong. How dare you, brother, relate this hadith? It's in Usul al-Kafi. That's very good, and that is a good sign that it's an acceptable hadith. But if it's something controversial, I'm going to look into it more. What else can go wrong? No, sometimes the hadith is not weak. Sometimes it's strong chain of narrators. Now somebody here, some people, yeah, they've done some rijal work. Rijal work. What is rijal? The science of the biographies of those who narrated these ahadith to us, that are located in the chains of narrators of these ahadith. Very nice. I have done rijal, for example. And I know that this person is reliable. This person is reliable all the way down. Here, the kids are separated from the men and the women. Because sometimes you will find someone like Shaykh al-Tusi that we owe everything to, who lived in the 5th century. That majority of our hadith and ijazat go through him, all of a sudden, a reliable hadith in this sense that has a strong chain of narrators is, I'm not gonna accept this hadith. What? Why? We think that when it comes to hadiths, and I've spoken about this elsewhere before, it's like 2 plus 2 equals 4. It's like math. No, it's not like that. It's not black and white. You have to gather clues and clues and clues. Sometimes the chain of narrators is awesome, but you have reason to not accept that hadith. Here, it gets very hard. Here, a person who spent 10 years in Hawza might not be able to do the job. There's more needed to be able to pinpoint. Sometimes that's not a problem. Sometimes the chain is not a problem. Sometimes the hadith, it doesn't have any problems either. But this is the part we want to talk about maybe tonight a little bit more. The hadith will have a context to it. Usually for us, when we hear taken out of context, it means that there were two lines that were said, for example. Only one line of it was related to us and mentioned to us. The other one was cut out. Yeah? The other sentence was clipped out and cropped out. So that's taken out of context. No, sometimes the whole hadith, brothers and sisters, is mentioned, as we shall see. We're going to move into some examples. Sometimes the whole hadith is mentioned. The context of it was 200 years ago during the Prophet's time, when, like, for example, Imam al-Jawad is saying the hadith. Whoa. Yeah. Sometimes context, taking something out of context means you cut it out of a paragraph. Sometimes taking out of context means you don't have a grasp of the whole hadith corpus. And since I don't, I can't tell that this had a context too. There's some cool examples we'll get to, inshallah. Sometimes taking out of context, the verse or the hadith does not have a context 200 years ago, and I'm looking at the whole hadith or the whole verse, but still I'm taking it out of context. Why? Because the wording was in a specific way, but it wasn't meant like that. Let me explain further. Sometimes the hadith is not restricted, it's absolute. In technical terms, it's mutlaq, they call it. Mutlaq, absolute. But what was meant by it was a restricted version. For example, let's go to a verse of the Quran. قَاتِلْ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. Kill the mushrikeen wherever you see them and find them. Is there any qaid here? Is there any restriction here? Are there any conditions here? No. What does that mean? That means if I'm like touring somewhere, I'm out somewhere on a trip as a tourist, and I see like a Hindu come in, I have to do something about it. Is that what's meant? Someone will say, the verse says, قَاتِلُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. Kill the mushrikeen wherever you find them. Mutlaq. How dare you go against the verse of the Quran? We laugh at that person. We say, what are you doing here? You should be somewhere else, like wherever ISIS is. But what do you mean? It's mutlaq. It's saying do this. I'm saying it's taken out of context. There's a reason for this. Why? What does it mean? It doesn't say anything. There's no conditions, nothing. No, there's a context to it. It's not mutlaq, it's muqayyad. There's a qayd, there's a condition, or there are some conditions. Does anyone doubt today that this verse does not mean that? That you're not supposed to do this in all times and all places? Yes. Sometimes we have none of these problems that I said. None of these problems. But there's a term in the hadith that we define as something else, and then we just take it from there. We build a big building, but it's standing on water. We don't understand. We look at the building, oh, such a beautiful conclusion I got from and drew from this hadith. But it's all based on my understanding of a certain term. Well, my understanding is flawed of that term. That was talking about something else. For example, the Quran talks about certain sins. I forgot what they were. About like killing and like doing very bad things. And then it says, the badness of all of these deeds, kan inda Allahi makruha. All of these things are makruh in the eyes of Allah. Someone will come on and say, oh, it's makruh, it's not haram. And then they'll start drawing conclusion from all of that. These things, everyone knows, if anything is going to be haram, it's these two or three things in the verse. But the verse ends with what? The badness and evil of these deeds is makruh in Allah's eyes. And what did that person understand? Makruh equals something that's not haram, it's not wajib. Yeah, it's better not to do it. Sometimes you have none of these problems even. None of these problems, brothers and sisters. But, I'm giving you a list here, brothers and sisters. I'm giving you a list. We're going through this list. It's important. But, there's different possibilities in the meaning of this. What did the Imam mean by this? What did the Prophet mean by this? This meaning is possible. This understanding is possible. That meaning is also a possibility. This third meaning is also a possibility. Which one is it? And we try our best, but we don't understand. For whatever reason. This is called ijmal. It becomes mujmal. Mujmal means vague. Can I act on something that I don't even know what it means exactly? I can't. Sometimes this is the problem. Sometimes there's three or four possibilities to a hadith. Someone sits up here and says the hadith, and this is what it's saying, bismillah. But if that person had discussed with somebody that's up to par with them a little bit in knowledge or whatever, they could convince him that, hey, this understanding of yours, there's another understanding that just as possible. And you reach ijmal regarding this hadith. I can't use the hadith anymore. But the sanad is good. The chain of narrative is perfect. I know the imam said it. These words came out of the mouth of the imam. There's no context. It doesn't matter because there's three or four possibilities here of what he meant. We don't know. We're trying, but we can't understand. That's why we put it aside. We have no choice. For example, in the Sunni school of thought, some will have this regarding hadith of Ghadir. Man kuntu mawla. We don't know what mawla means. Why? Because mawla has 27 different meanings. Which one was meant by the Prophet? So we'll put the hadith aside. Of course, the Shia school will say we have 20 different clues that show, and context clues that show what the Prophet meant. But I'm just giving this as an example. This is what the answer will be. They will say it's mujmal. Mujmal, I don't know. This is what some say, not all of Ahlul Sunnah. They will say it's mujmal. I don't know what it means, so I'll put it aside. I actually believe the Prophet said it. I don't know what he meant by it. And we can't say anything in return. I will try our best to convince, but at the end of the day, it's mujmal for them. Fine, whatever. Sometimes none of these problems. But there's another hadith that goes right against this one. Ta'arud. How many do we have so far? We had like six or seven things that I talked about. If none of these problems are there, sometimes there's ta'arud. Why? One hadith says this is like this, another hadith goes against it. And they both have perfect chains of narrators, no context, they're not mujmal, we know exactly what they mean, but they're going against each other. What do I do? Someone will say, man, what are you talking about? Why are you causing confusion? If this is confusion now, and we're getting a little hurt by hearing this, the ulama of the past would write books as a result of this concern. Shaykh al-Tusi, one of the four main hadith books of the Shia school, is Tahdhib al-Ahkam of Shaykh al-Tusi. In the Muqaddimah, in the intro, he explains that people were starting to doubt the Shia school of our own people. saying, what kind of religion, what kind of faith and madhab is this? That for every hadith, I will find something that goes against it. There's a contradictory hadith that I find. So he writes this book, 10 volumes. He says, no, don't worry, people. It's not as contradictory as you think. Let me explain. This hadith and this hadith that seem to go against each other, they're not really going against each other. This is the explanation for it. Because of this dalil, this reason, and this reason. People write books on these things. If all of a sudden we feel like, oh my God, what's happening? Nothing to be afraid about. This is something people were afraid about 1,000 years ago. We just don't have time to research and to understand how it was. Okay, so that's number one, brothers and sisters. What could possibly go wrong with a hadith? This, all of this. So those people, some people who ask, oh, what do you do like in Hawza for 20 years? Is there something wrong with you? Like, it's hard for you to grasp things? No, there's a lot of work to be done, really. A lot of work to be done. These are the things that could go wrong. So a person has to sometimes spend more time to ascertain that this is something that I can understand from it first. I'm allowed to go to this hadith first. Then to spend time to actually understand what it says. Lots of time is spent to even understand, can I say that this was said by the imam or the prophet? Okay, having said all of that, these are the problems we can have. I want to move now into an example of one of those people that I personally feel has an agenda out there. I saw this clip a few years ago. It was a lecture. And they're not in the English-speaking world, so I don't want you to think of names or anything. No. Somewhere else. It could be Farsi, it could be Arabic-speaking, it could even be Urdu. Some of you might think I understand Urdu, I don't know. Somewhere out there, brothers and sisters, someone gave a lecture once. We want to see how, I want to illustrate through an example, how maybe out of these 7 or 8 things that I just listed, how without even noticing it, 4 or 5 of them can happen regarding a set of hadiths that are used to prove a point. Recite a salawat. The matter of unity, the concept of unity between Shia and Sunnah is something that's ongoing. The Shia school, the Sunni school, some ulama are for it. Maybe a few might have problems with it, whatever. That's not the point of tonight's lecture. As I said, tonight we want to understand about how hadiths work, how our approach to hadiths are supposed to be. This is just going to be an example. This concept of unity, some people, for whatever reason, they have a major issue with it. Very well. If you have an issue, bismillah, let's discuss. Let's see what the reasons are. In this lecture that I was talking about, these were some of the reasons that were presented. These hadiths that I will read. First, I will quote the person who says who was delivering the lecture. I'm going to quote a paragraph from him. And then let's see what his arguments are. And let's see how, if we're not careful, we can be fooled as well. He says, if we're going to speak about unity, we have to get the boundaries from the Prophet and the Imams. Bismillah. You want to say Islam says unity. Well, bismillah, we have to go get, if the concept itself is coming from the Ahlul Bayt and the Prophet, we have to go to the same source to see what the boundaries are. Unity is there, we know, but what are the boundaries? Let's go to the Ahlul Bayt. A precise interpretation of unity that is the acceptable version of unity in the eyes of the Prophet. For this, we will go to hadiths, he says. In the hadiths, we find a very precise definition of wahda. Wahda, unity. Let us see what the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt see as the pure wahda. And he starts. He says, in the book of Ma'an al-Akhbar, who belongs to Shaykh al-Saduq, which most of our ahadith today, you can say, probably come from his books. He had about 300 plus books of hadith that he had written over the years and centuries. Because there was no printing back then, because the Shia were persecuted, out of these 300 something maybe, how many do we have? We have about 17 of his books left. That shows how mazloom the Shia has been over the ages. Shaykh al-Saduq, 17 of his books remain. As a matter of fact, we have Kutub al-Arba'a, right? The Shia school has 4 books. The 4 main hadith books. Our ulama tell us, no, it was 5. It wasn't 4. One of them was destroyed and never reached us. I think the name was Madinatul Ilm of Shaykh al-Saduq. That never reached us. We just have Al-Kafi, Man La Yahdur Al-Faqih, Tahdhib and Istibsar. We don't have the fifth one. We lost it. Wow. I can understand a second, third-hand book not reaching us, but a first-hand book of the Shia school not reaching us. Yep. It's the real world, brothers and sisters. That's the real world. The real world has no mercy. All right. So Shaykh al-Saduq in Ma'an al-Akhbar, he says these. He brings these three hadiths. In which chapter? The chapter of Jama'ah and Furqah and Sunnah and Bid'ah. There's a chapter called these four titles. The chapter of Jama'ah, the chapter of Bid'ah, the chapter of Furqah and Sunnah. All right. He reads, he says, these three hadiths, I'm going to read them to you really quick. Su'ila Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam an jama'ati ummatihi faqal jama'atu ummati ahlul haq wa in qallu. So remember, we're talking about unity and wahda. Wahda. Right now we have jama'ah. The Prophet was asked about the jama'ah of his ummah, of his people. O Prophet, who is the jama'ah of your ummah? The congregation of your people, the entity that we can look at and say, this is an entity, something that you acknowledge. The Prophet said, jama'atu ummati ahlul haq wa in qallu. The ones who are on the path of the truth, even if they're small in number. One hadith. Second hadith. Qila lirasulillahi sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, ma jama'atu ummatik? Who is the jama'ah of your ummah? Who is the congregation of your people? قال من كان على الحق وإن كانوا عشرة. Whoever is on the haq and the truth, even if they're 10 people. Second hadith. Third hadith. جاء رجل إلى أمير المؤمنين عليه السلام فقال أخبرني عن السنة والبدعة وعن الجماعة وعن الفرقة or فرقة. فرقة, it seems. Tell me about these four things, O Amir al-Mu'mineen. Someone came to Amir al-Mu'mineen, asked him about four things. One, what is bid'ah? What is sunnah? What is jama'ah? And what is firqah? فَقَالَ أَمِيرُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ السُنَّةُ مَا سَنَّ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ. The sunnah is what the Prophet did. And what he established as what we have to follow. That is sunnah. Anything else is not sunnah. Because as you all know, in parentheses, let me say this very quickly. When Umar ibn al-Khattab was dying and he put together a 6-person council of the great Sahaba of the Prophet to choose the next Khalifa, what sealed the deal for Uthman becoming the third Khalifa was what? A question that was asked by one of these 6 people on that council, in that council. A question that he posed to Uthman. He said, oh Uthman, I'm about to vote. It's boiled down to either you or Ali ibn Abi Talib being Khalifa. I asked Ali ibn Abi Talib, whose sunnah are you going to follow? He said, I'm going to follow Kitabullah wa sunnah to Rasulullah, nothing else. Uthman, you tell me now. The person who's asking, his name was Abdul Rahman bin Auf. Uthman, tell me, whose sunnah are you going to follow? He said, sunnah of Rasulullah and who? The Shaykhain, sunnah of Abu Bakr and Umar. That is the sunnah that I'll follow. So some might think that the sunnah, real sunnah, is the sunnah of the Prophet and the first two khulafa. Here, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, no. Sunnah of Rasulullah. What is bid'ah? Al-bid'ah ma uhditha min ba'dihi. Whatever was innovated after the Prophet, that was all bid'ah. That is irrelevant to what we're talking about tonight. Wal-jama'ah, who is the jama'ah? Ahlul haq wa in kanu qalilan. The people of the true path, even if they're small in number, they're the jama'ah. And the firqa, the sect, the denomination, the one who's an offshoot, you can say, who are they? They are ahlul batil, the ones who are on the wrong path. وَإِن كَانُوا كَثِيرًا, even if they're a lot in number, they are the denomination. Wow. Usually, offshoots, usually denominations are branches that come out of a main body, a main trunk. Here, the Imam is saying, no. Numbers aren't what counts, as if this is what counts. Haqq and batil is what counts. Okay. These three hadiths, he mentions. And you know, of course, he's smirking as he's saying and explaining. explaining how these hadiths, the lecturer, explaining how these hadiths are proving the point of how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the imams, the prophet, they're not interested in the unity that some people talk about. How? He says, look at these ahadith. It says the jama'ah in Allah's eyes. He does it very subtly, by the way. I mean, props to him. He says the jama'ah. What does jama'ah mean? Jama'ah means where people do ijtima', they get together. Jama'ah equals ijtima'. Ijtima'. And ijtima' means ittihad. Ittihad means becoming one. And from ittihad, what do we understand? We understand wahda, unity. Wahda Islamiyah. So it's as if these hadiths are saying, instead of you saying, قِيلَ لِرَسُولِ اللَّهِ مَا جَمَعَتُ أُمَّتِكَ, you can say, it's as if the hadith is saying, قِيلَ لِرَسُولِ اللَّهِ مَا هِيَ الْوَحْدَةِ الْإِسْلَامِيَّةِ. What is wahda Islamiyah? I don't even think I have to explain any further where the fallacies are. We'll get there, inshallah. And man, are people reciting salawats, and man, they're happy when he says these things. Proving their point, really, they are, through these hadiths, right? That's what his argument looks like. From jama'ah, he reaches wahda Islamiyah. But you say, but what if the true path isn't enough in number? He says that the hadith told us, numbers don't count. Haqq and batil are what count. Let me ask you this now, he'll go on. He'll say, what happened in Saqifa? Was it haqq or batil? Batil, of course, is batil. We all believe it was batil. What happened in Saqifa? Where Ali ibn Abi Talib was put aside and the first Khalifa was chosen? We believe that's not right. That's not truth. So if someone believes in that, are they in haqq or batil side? Batil side, okay. And if they're on batil side, then what happens? Is there a jama'ah with batil or not? You tell me. I don't need to tell you. You tell me. That's the indirectly he's telling us this. He's like, you tell me. I don't need to tell you. If there's batil, what did the hadith tell us? Is there a jama'ah or not? No, there is no jama'ah. If there's no jama'ah, and jama'ah equals Islamic unity, then is there a unity or not? Huh? Is there a unity or not? There is no unity. We're not going to be strong. We're not going to be high in number. Doesn't matter. The hadith is telling us. Man, if people take this, they take clips out of what I'm talking about tonight, I'm going to sound like somebody is totally against unity. It's as if, I shouldn't have given it that idea. Now it's going to happen for sure. So, this is the argument, brothers and sisters. I can just end here. We can go home and not fix the problem, actually. We'll all go back thinking that unity is something that is frowned upon in Islam. Unity that has to do with Ahlul Batil. So when you hear this at first, you feel like, okay, that is convincing. And the people who are sitting there, man, they're loving it. They're convinced. Now let's move to the problems that we have in these hadiths now. Out of that list of 7, 8, I don't know how many it was that I mentioned in the beginning of the talk, of the things that can go wrong with hadiths, let's see how many of them apply here. Man, it's going to be nice. Let's have some fun. All right, the ishkalat, the problems. Number one, when this individual is reading these three hadiths to make it sound cooler, you know, what do? They read the chain of narrators first too. It just sounds cool, you know what I'm saying? So he says, "An Hafsin, an Hafs ibn Umar, an Abi Abdullah qal." That's the first narration. And then he reads the hadith. Second hadith I want to read to you. An Abdullah bin Yahya bin Abdullah al-Alawi rafa'ahu qal fulan. So-and-so, from so-and-so, rafa'ahu. I'll explain what that means later. Third hadith. An Asim bin Humaid rafa'ahu qal fulan. That Asim bin Humaid, he did rafa'ah and he said this hadith. Right here from the start, problem number one, brothers and sisters, everyone, every kindergartner knows in Hawza that a hadith that has this term in it, rafa'ahu, totally unreliable. It is a marfu'a. Marfu'a hadith or riwayah holds no value. If you want to base Islam on this, you're not allowed. You can get yourself ready for the hellfire because you didn't do it with proper proof. It's a marfu' hadith, marfu'a riwayah. Marfu'a. Like if we were, instead of us being people, right? If we were hadiths sitting down right now, if I wanted to diss my fellow hadith, I would tell him, what's up, marfu'a? That's a diss. That means like you're nothing. And then you're basing, and this is not akhlaqi ahadith, as I said before. Something that doesn't really have too many implications. Oh my God, the ramifications to this. Me and Ahlul Sunnah, for example, say me telling Ahlul Sunnah, I have nothing to do with you because you're Ahlul Batil, based on these ahadith. And dismissing the whole concept of unity. That's something severe. Something very, very, very important and significant. Basing Islamic thought on this hadith is not permissible. So out of these three hadith, two of them are marfu'. Straight up. We can just put them aside. There's only one that's there, and I didn't even check the sanad of that one. It has a chain. Just because it has a chain doesn't mean everything is still set. No. You have to check the narrators as well. But let's just say that one was proper. Let's just say all three were legitimate. What else do we have going on here? You jumped from the term jama'ah to wahda islamiyah? How'd you do that? That's some proper magic. The hadith is talking about jama'ah. Jama'ah means a congregation. That's one thing. But then coming to the conclusion that any form of unity and coexistence even is a problem? How did we reach from A to D? You had to say A equals B. B equals C. C equals D, so A equals D. That's what you did. But you have to prove to us A equals B first, and that B equals C, and then C equals D. If you said jama'a equals ijtima', first you got to prove that. Who says? If you went from ijtima' to ittihad, how'd you do that? And then from ittihad to wahda. And the wahda islamiyah that people are talking about today. How'd you make it there? That's awesome. How'd you do that? It's like that guy who said that some people will cite a verse of the Quran. The Quran said, when you go to speak to the Prophet, give a sadaqah before you go. Give a sadaqah before you go to speak to the Prophet. We have this in the Quran. Of course, that verse was abrogated later. But we do have the verse that says, give a sadaqah, O people, before you go and speak in private with the Prophet. Some people, they will jump. They will make the jump. They say, okay, the verse said sadaqah, so now it's okay to charge whatever I like if I'm going to teach Islam. Okay. If you want to charge to teach Islam, it's perfectly fine. It's okay. But don't say that this verse is saying that. The verse was talking about giving a sadaqah. Who says the sadaqah even went to the Prophet's pocket? How did we equate sadaqah with charging? I'm not going to say it's wrong. Let's just assume there's nothing wrong with charging. But you can't say the verse is talking about this. You get what I'm saying, brothers and sisters? A term is found in the hadith or in the verse of the Quran. We interpret it in a specific way. We put together a whole lecture about it. But it's a whole building that's standing on water. The building might look nice. The lecture might look nice. But it's all revolving around one thing and based on one thing. And that is that sadaqah, for example, means charging. Or that jama'ah means wahda islamiyah. How'd you get there? No, I'm sorry. That's not how it works. You can fool people. But you can't fool people who are learned. You can't fool them. That's the problem, though. How did I start my whole lecture tonight? It's a world of communication that we live in, and speed, and no time anymore. People don't have time to verify things. It's not their fault either. That's just the times we're living in. That's why we come here and gather, so that we can get an idea of some of the things that are happening around us. At least don't act as if some people are infallible. No, I can question. I can ask at least, where'd you get this from? That's the second problem with this argument and using these hadiths. How'd you get from jama'ah to wahda islamiyah? How'd you get there? Number three, there are different meanings that are possible for this hadith. ijmal sometimes might show itself here. Ijmal. Then what is exactly meant? Is it really saying don't have unity with anyone except Shia? Maybe it's just letting us know that, hey, don't be worried. Don't be worried if you're small in number. You are the one that counts in Allah's eyes and in the Imam's eyes. You are the real congregation. Don't let others call themselves congregation. You're the congregation. But does that mean that I'm not going to team up with others as well? The hadith has nothing to do with that. So the least is that we come to the conclusion that we don't understand the hadith necessarily, what exactly it means. Although personally, I'm going to try to prove to us that no, we know what it's talking about actually, as we look at the context. Another problem. Ta'arud. Ta'arud is also an issue here. If we just say that this hadith is saying, don't worry about numbers, we have another hadith that says, no, worry about being part of the jama'ah and the majority. So you got to cover that as well, please. Amir al-Mu'mineen Nahj al-Balagha, he's speaking to the Khawarij. He says, وَأَلْزِمُ السَّوَادِ الْأَعْظَمِ. Stay with the majority. Stick with the majority. فَإِنَّ يَدَ اللَّهِ مَعَ الْجَمَاعَةِ. Allah's hand is with the jama'ah. The majority, jama'ah. It's as if Amir al-Mu'mineen is letting us know that the jama'ah, the majority is jama'ah in Allah's eyes. وَإِيَّاكُمْ وَالْفِرْقَةِ or furqa, and be careful to be like those, the branches and the offshoots. Be part of the majority. فَإِنَّ الشَّاذْ مِنَ النَّاسِ لِلشَّيْطَانَ كَمَا أَنَّ الشَّاذْ مِنَ الْغَنَمْ لِلذِّئَبِ. The same way a person that goes to the side and marginalizes themselves is for shaitan. The same way a sheep that goes away from the flock is going to be prey to the wolves. There's a ta'arud here. Even if it is saying the hadith what you say, there's other hadith that might go against it. Although personally, let me say this, that this ta'arud can be solved. But I'm just saying that there's another issue. How come you don't cover that? How come you talk about that? But what's more important than all of these things, brothers and sisters, is the context. But the hadiths, they're all mentioned. Like, you can't find a fuller version, a more complete version of these hadiths. They've been taken out of context, but not that someone snipped the beginning and the end of them. No. Let's look at what's going on here, brothers and sisters. Recite a salawat. We have a concept, and it's a hard one, when it comes to hadith sciences and studies. Sometimes certain hadiths are nadhira into other hadiths. They are looking as if to other hadiths. One might be from Imam al-Sadiq, the other by the Prophet. But this hadith is looking at that hadith. It's in light of that hadith. Together they come together to as two pieces of a puzzle to complete a puzzle for us. It's very hard to pinpoint them, but sometimes you can tell, no, this is something that falls under that category. Here, what do we have? We have this concept of jama'ah. Brothers and sisters, if you noticed in those three hadiths, they all talked about what? Su'ila Rasulullah. Qila li Rasulillah. Su'ila Amirul Mu'minin. Ja'a rajulun ila Amirul Mu'minin. Faqal. And asked the Imam. In all of these cases, brothers and sisters, someone is coming to the Imam and the Prophet, asking a question. What is the jama'ah? Brothers, sisters, tell me. Would any of us ever wake up, you know, in the morning, wake up, you'd be like, you know what? Today I'm going to go ask Imam Ali about jama'ah. What is jama'ah? Does that ever happen? Like, just like for some weird reason, you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh my God, I better go ask about jama'ah today. Jama'ah means like a gathering. What's the problem with jama'ah? No. It might mean something special. How did you get that idea that it might mean something special? Was it mentioned before somewhere else that the question comes to your mind? What is this jama'ah? Let me go ask about it. And three different cases too, not just one case. Different occasions, people are asking, what is jama'ah? What is jama'ah? And jama'ah isn't a specific word in the Qur'an, for example. Do you find jama'ah in the Qur'an? We don't find jama'ah in the Qur'an. But at the same time, you can be sure that on three different occasions, maybe even more, people aren't waking up in the morning and be like, you know what, I'm going to go ask about Jama'ah today. Must be something, there must be some background information that we don't know about. And then we have a hadith by the Prophet. Very famous hadith that till today, all of you have heard it. And when we hear that hadith, we find out that, that set of ahadith where people are asking about Jama'ah, maybe is enough, brothers and sisters. We don't have to prove it. Maybe this is the case, is enough to not be able to use these hadiths to disprove unity. A maybe is enough. I think it's more than maybe. I think it is what these ahadith are all about, as a matter of fact. But even a maybe is enough for you to not be able to rely on these hadiths as proof for disunity. Maybe is enough. Maybe during the Prophet's time when people were talking about a certain concept, because the Prophet had mentioned it and stressed on it, till Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen's time and till other Imams' times, people still had questions about that concept. And don't be frightened by this, brothers and sisters. People during Imam Sadiq's time are still asking questions about Salatul Dhuhr and Asr, the exact time for Salatul Dhuhr and Asr. When is the exact time? There was still confusion in Imam Sadiq's time regarding the time of Salatul Dhuhr and Asr. They still had confusion, let alone something like this. What is Jama'ah? What am I talking about? I'm talking about the famous hadith of the Prophet where he talks about Jama'ah. He says, إِنَّ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ تَفَرَّقَتْ عَلَىٰ عِيسَىٰ إِحْدَىٰ وَسَبْعِينَ فِرْقَةً فَهَلَكَ سَبْعُونَ فِرْقَةً 71 sects and denominations came out of Bani Israel. During whose time? Ala Isa, in Prophet Isa's time. Out of 71, how many were destroyed? 70. Takhallasa firqa. One was the firqa that was saved. One was the denomination that was saved. Inna ummati sataftariqu ala thnatayna wa sab'in. Ala thnatayni wa sab'in. My ummah will be divided into 72 firqas. And 71 will be destroyed. قَالُوا يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ مَنْ تِلْكَ الْفِرْقَةِ Tell us, who is that one out of 72 that's going to make it? He said, الْجَمَاعَةِ خَلَص. He said, the Jama'ah. Right away, if I hear this hadith, I'm like, okay, oh Prophet, please explain, what is the Jama'ah? Who is the Jama'ah? Till the Imam Ali's time, till the other Imam's times, people still had this question. Maybe the Prophet didn't want to open it up any more than that. Maybe the Imams were supposed to open this up. Who is the Jama'ah that the Prophet talked about? They tell him, no, don't think that the Jama'ah is the majority. The Jama'ah is who? Ahlul Haqq. That is the denomination that will make it in Yawm al-Qiyamah. So wow, maybe these hadiths that we just discussed, those three, are nadhir. They're looking at, they're in light of the famous hadith of the Prophet that he mentions the term Jama'ah. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's enough, although for me it's pretty sure. Why? Because where were these three hadiths mentioned in? Which book was it again? Ma'ani al-Akhbar. Oh my God, this is so awesome. They were mentioned in Ma'ani al-Akhbar. The book of Ma'ani al-Akhbar, what is it? Sometimes even the book gives context to the hadith. Ma'ani al-Akhbar means the meanings of things that were said in other ahadith. Subhanallah. So, Shaykh al-Saduq brings these three in this book. Why? Because there was something out there in other ahadith that was unclear by the name of Jama'ah. And these hadiths are mentioning what was meant by that. So you have to put these puzzle pieces together, brothers and sisters. Wow. You see how all of a sudden, something that we were sure about goes against the concept, all of a sudden is totally irrelevant to that concept. This is what's happening today. This is just one example. There's many other examples. You know, you see these things, it hurts. It hurts because you don't get a chance to discuss them. And people, they take it and they run with it because they think this is Islam. Yadullahi ma'al jama'ah, some ahadith. Some of them are Sunni hadith, not Shia hadith, but whatever. Yadullahi ma'al jama'ah. أهل السنة والجماعة. Everyone wants to be the jama'ah. So they are asking the imams, what is this jama'ah? And the imams are explaining, hey, don't worry about numbers. If there's batil, it doesn't matter if there's 1,000, because batil equals 0. If you're 10, they're 1,000, it doesn't matter. Because 1,000 times 0, what is it? Tell me. What's 1,000 times 0? 0. What's 10 times 1? 10. Which one has more value? Batil will not help at all. So that's not the jama'ah the Prophet was talking about that is going to necessarily be on the right path. You see, it all just clicks all of a sudden. I thought this was about unity and Islamic unity. Can I have unity with Ahlul Batil now? Can I or not? We have to see. Let's see if we can find other hadiths that allow it or do not allow it. That's another story. But you can't use these hadiths. That's the point. This is also something that was prevalent during the time of other imams. This is the final segment of, or one to last. I'm going to go a little bit over my time. I hope you forgive me. This is very important. This was happening during the time of the Prophet and the imam, excuse me, as well. I'll give you one example. There's more than one example. I'll just give you one that's pretty cool. There's a hadith that goes like this, that Zurara and Muhammad bin Muslim, these two great companions of Imam Sadiq, they go and ask. Sa'alahu. They asked, both of them asked. These two are all-stars, by the way. Muhammad bin Muslim and Zurara. Oof, these guys. If we have anything today, the Shia school is through them and their ahadith that they narrated to us. Thousands of ahadith that these two have. Muhammad bin Muslim and Zurara, they asked the Imam about what? Something we'll never ask about, we'll never have questions about, but they asked. What was it? An akli luhum al-humur. They asked about eating donkey meat because Marajid don't say it's haram. It's makruh at worst case. It's makruh. It's not haram. Of course, no one's going to eat it today, but they asked the imam about this. Look at how the imam answers. Does the imam say halal or haram? They asked him, can we eat donkey meat? Did he say yes or no? No. Look at how he answered. Maybe it was to give a lesson to us as well and anyone who hears these ahadith. He answers, he says, Naha Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi an akliha yawma khaybar. I know why you're asking me. You're asking me because you've heard that the Prophet said, don't eat donkey meat. When did he say it? Yawm khaybar. On the day of the Battle of Khaybar. During the Battle of Khaybar, it wasn't one day. Battle of Khaybar was long. Months maybe. The Prophet had said, it's haram for you to eat donkey meat. Someone will take that and say, Qala Rasulullah, eating donkey meat is haram. So they'll have a fatwa on that. The imam answers like this. He says, he said don't eat it on the day of Khaybar, in the days of Khaybar. Why? وَإِنَّمَا نَهَا عَنْ أَكْلِهَا فِي ذَلِكَ الْوَقْتِ لِأَنَّهَا كَانَتْ حَمُولَةَ النَّاسِ. Because back then, there was battles happening. They needed these for the ride that the animals would give them. If you're going to start slaughtering your donkeys, you don't have any ride anymore. Flattening the tires to your car. You won't have a ride anymore on the battlefield. If you're on the ground, not going to get anywhere. So Naha Rasulullah, true Naha Rasulullah, the Prophet said, don't eat them. But because of a certain situation then. But he's answering this in this way to let these people know that, hey, just because it says Rasulullah said don't eat it, doesn't mean it's haram per se. There was a certain situation there. Whose job is it to determine this though? The ulama have to go and do their best to find if there is a context. This is Imam Sadiq's time. He is giving context to what? Something the Prophet said. 150 years ago maybe. This is how it works, brothers and sisters. It's not easy. Now here, the Imam helped us. Sometimes it's not the case. Sometimes we have to figure it out ourselves. Sometimes it was so clear back then, the Imam doesn't explain. We have to figure that out. Us people, the Shia, have to figure it out. Yeah. That's number three. Number four on our list was, what do we do now? What are you saying? Don't go to hadith books anymore? Don't go to lectures anymore? Of course not. I don't believe in that. Exclude everybody. Anyone who's only done 20 years of, formal education in Islamic studies should lecture. No. Anyone who can talk about the basics, bismillah, if they keep within their boundaries. What is being mentioned here is that when it comes to these very, very sensitive issues, we have to be careful. If someone says something, we run it by our maraja. We run it by our ulama. by the greats, other greats. We won't take one idea. I don't care how important this person is. I don't care how much of a celebrity speaker he is. It doesn't matter. I have to go and bounce it off of others as well. People I trust, people I know have studied well. See if there's anything else that has been covered or not said, just to be on the safe side. So when it comes to these topics, yeah, we have to be a little careful. Make sure we go and ask a little bit more, do a little bit more research. Nowadays, you can find this stuff online even. Or else we will fall under the category of neo-akhbaris, brothers and sisters. Akhbarism was a movement. I don't have time to talk about that. But in a nutshell, now, this, you have a trend, you have this neo-akhbarism in some people, where it says, I'm going to go by the hadith all the way. Then what sets you apart from other schools of thought who do the exact same thing with Bukhari and Muslim? What made us Shia? The fact that we think a little bit more, not think versus what the imam said. No, think in trying to determine what the imam meant. This is the solution. We have no choice. We have to be a little careful these days. If we don't have the time for it, we won't jump to certain conclusions either. Inshallah, Allah gives us all tawfiq to be in touch with our great ulama, to be able to at least be in touch with them, at least have some more knowledge on how things work. One, and two, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives tawfiq to our speakers, to our ulama, to our muhaddithin, to our fuqaha, and all of them as well, to have even more insight into the ahadith that the imams have said so that they reach us, so that we're able to have easier lives, so that we don't have to do ihtiyat in everything. And thirdly, Allah gives us all tawfiq to act upon what we learn from these ahadith. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.